Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hello, Diana Frake here. I am the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness industries about their journeys to success and their insights in business. This episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. This episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, RAI, PepsiCo, Hi-Key, and Evie, many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, beverage, and wellness industries. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call and let's talk. Well, today I get to introduce you all to Richa Gupta, who is president and founder of Good Food for Good. Richa is a passionate consumer marketer with 15 plus years of experience in Canada, the USA, and India, spanning consumer packaged goods, retail, and fashion industries, which includes General Mills and Hudson Bay. Richa uses her leadership and cooking experience to build a better, healthier food experience by making it easy for everyone to eat well and do good. Well, hello, Miss Richa. How are you today?
I am great. Thank you for asking. How yes, are you doing?
I am fine. Apparently, my tongue is tied today. I'm not sure, but that's okay. I'm good. Might be a little tired. You're in Canada right now. Are you in Toronto today?
I am definitely in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. I love my Canadian neighbors. You guys are so good. So I want to first start off by having you tell us a little bit about your brand, Good Food for Good. Why does it exist?
Sounds good. So Good Food for Good is a purpose-driven brand on a mission to make it easy for people to eat well and do good. That's the reason we started. That's why we exist. We make a line of sauces that are organic, that don't compromise on ingredients for convenience, or I should say don't compromise on quality for mm-hmm. convenience. Mm-hmm. And every time you buy our product, we feed a person in need. Mm-hmm. It's a buy one, feed one model. And we've been able to donate over 1.2 million meals till date.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you. We're very grateful for that opportunity.
Yes. Oh, so when you say sauces, what do you mean by that?
We have three lines in the market right now. We have a line of condiments. Mm-hmm. Our no added sugar ketchup and barbecue sauces mm-hmm. are available all across Canada and United States. Mm-hmm. Our second line is our line of organic, vegan, Indian and Mexican cooking sauces. We are just adding some flavor to the organic section of your food, because before we launched our sauces, there were no flavorful. So it was only either pasta sauce or soy sauce or coconut aminos mm-hmm. if you go to an organic section. And for me, the question was, hey, if I'm trying to eat healthy, why am I required to cook everything from scratch every night of the day?
Yeah.
And, you know, people who are ready to eat not so good food are able to use convenient stuff.
Right.
That's why we created. And right now we are launching world's first plant-based bolognese sauce that's powered by seeds.
Oh.
So we only use pumpkin seeds. It has the same amount of protein as your meat sauce.
Yes.
Same texture, but all plant-based.
I love it. You know, food science has certainly helped us quite a bit in these last few years. There was up until actually not too long ago, it was really hard to find food that was that didn't have a lot of additives and all of those extra elements that got added for into convenience foods. And food technology, not just from the food manufacturing side, but from the fulfillment side, like how are we filling it, like has come such a long way. And so grateful that brands like yours have kind of pushed that technology along and taken advantage of it in order to bring these kinds of conveniences that a lot of parents and families and frankly, everybody is looking for right now. Yeah. So I understand that you guys are a fellow B Corp, just like we are. And I always like to ask, you know, why was becoming a B Corp important for you and your brand?
So Good Food for Good from day one has been a social enterprise, right? Mm-hmm, like we started with the buy one, feed one mission. We knew we wanted to do good. Prior to Good Food for Good, I worked in a very capitalistic environment, and I was pretty done with it. I wanted to do something that made a difference. Mm-hmm. So we knew the minute we found out about B Corp, we knew this is something that we can relate to. It's like finding a community that yes. believes in the same things that you do. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a village yes. to grow a brand. So we wanted to join the village. We wanted to join forces with similar minded companies to yeah. bring this difference. Because to be honest, what B Corp does should be the norm for every business. It should not be a certification. That should be how businesses should be run. They need to not just do good for the shareholders in terms of financially good for shareholders, mm-hmm. but do good for shareholders that do get impacted whether they have invested in the company or not, right? Mm-hmm. Like your environment, people who work for you, just people in general. We all yes. live on one planet.
Yes.
So to me, that was important to be part of a community that believed in the same values.
Yeah. And for those of you who are listening today that are not familiar with or maybe not intimately familiar with what a B Corp is, B Corporation is a type of certification that a company can get whereby you subscribe to the way you run your business as literally a force for good. And it's pretty invasive in by way of methodology. Like you are investigated by all of your different business practices around social and environmental justice and elements along those lines. Everything from how you source your vendors to how you run your business, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It is a really holistic ecosystem and environment that is very self-feeding. And so, Richa, when I ask people this, I get different responses frequently. But what was it? What B Corp initiative would you say that you find yourself advocating for the most, or maybe right now? But is there like an element that you're really like, I'm really passionate about blank right now? Anything in particular?
For me, giving back was always something that I was very passionate about. So the fact that it's not just good for you, but it's also good for someone who's not related to the business at all. Mm-hmm. That idea of what we do, not just not have negative impact on the planet, but how can yep. we have a positive
yes.
impact on somebody's life who, you know, might not even know who you are. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I've been very passionate about. Mm-hmm. Off late, climate change, of course, like that's something that we cannot, no one can ignore what's right. happening. And if we are not actively doing something to make a positive difference, we are actively making a negative difference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that's become a big priority for me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I want to kind of step back into you and your brand. Now we know what the brand stands for. Maybe can you share a little bit about your journey to Good Food? How did you get here? Where did the idea come from?
Absolutely. So prior to Good Food for Good, I was working at General Mills in marketing. And even before that, actually, story goes a little bit before that. I was in fashion. I was working in Hudson's Bay in buying. And around the time that I was pregnant with my daughter, I just started, and it's not the first time I got the feeling, but it became unbearable to be in an environment that was very superficial, to not be able to do something that had more purpose or more meaning. I think I craved meaning in my life, and I was lacking that. So I actually decided to do an MBA. So I left the fashion world, did MBA, thinking that, okay, I'll go to a nonprofit or something that's more meaningful. So when General Mills opportunity came across, I convinced myself, I'm like, hey, I will be doing food, right? Yes. And food touches everyone. So if I can make a positive difference in food, I think I'm on the right path.
Yes.
And that's the leap of faith that I took, and I joined General Mills. Absolutely loved the learning. Like, I loved the way CPGs really train your mind to think about business.
Yes.
Very grateful for that. My team was amazing. People were amazing. But my role changed, and I started learning a lot more about what was going in the food. And then I started asking questions, and those questions took me back, or actually I should say not getting the right answers to those questions. Took me back to where I was when I was at Hudson's Bay on, hey, I'm not doing anything positive here. I felt I was back and I was lost, that I'd lost 5 years of my life, and I am back where I was, and I am still not making a positive difference in the world. Sorry about that. So that was happening on one side. On the other side, my daughter was growing up, and I was learning more about what goes in the food, and I just couldn't squirt ketchup on my daughter's food after knowing that a serving of ketchup has the same amount of sugar as a cookie, or make a quick meal for her using a packaged sauce when I knew those ingredients are going to be bad for her. So I think mom guilt in me was much bigger because I grew up in India. I grew up in a family where my mom cooked every meal from scratch.
Yes, me too.
So, right?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, when you grow up like that, ordering a pizza is like, oh my God, am I killing my child?
I know. You feel like you're going to mom hell or something like that. It's the worst feeling. I get it. Yeah.
So I knew there's something I needed to do to get out of that feeling on making myself happy. To be honest, I'm doing Good Food for Good because it makes me happy. It fulfills my soul. It gives me a reason to be.
Yes.
It's the combination of the me missing out on not doing something that was meaningful to my own personal problem on, hey, the food's not fulfilling my need, created Good Food for Good. And that's that. And today our products are available all across Canada and the United States.
Awesome. I'm curious because I've met many mothers, of course, on the show with littles. Does your daughter get involved in the business in any way, shape, or form?
She was part of our Dragon's Den pitch. Yeah, she.
Okay.
She guides me on my TikTok videos.
Oh, she does.
I know, and she helps out wherever we can. But she's not. I don't think she's very. Right now, she's 13. She's not very entrepreneurial minded yet.
Well, and she might not be. Right, that might not be her way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But she does help us out.
That's wonderful.
Whatever she can. Yeah, okay. I was telling her, I'm like, 2 years, you can be my social media manager.
Just why not?
Exactly. Oh, this is what you live and breathe. Exactly. Do it for money.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's wonderful. Now, the brand has been around for about 5 years now or longer?
A little longer, but we didn't. I didn't start scaling till 2017.
Okay.
From late 2013 or early 2014 is when we launched.
Gotcha.
I was on stealth mode. You know, being with my daughter was more important at that time.
Of course. Of course. So when did you know you were headed in the right direction with this idea?
So initially, I was just doing farmers markets. Again, another thing I learned from General Mills, do lemonade stand, learn as much as you can about your consumer.
Yes.
So that was my goal. So for the first couple of years, that's what my business plan was, that I'll only do farmers market, no retail at all. However, in our second farmers market, I believe, there was a buyer from one store, the main store in Toronto, Yorkville mm-hmm. store, Whole Foods buyer was there. And he's like, and I had seriously brown paper craft labels on my
sure.
on my jars that were yes. printed on my home printer. Mm-hmm. It was like, at that time, I was at a stage where I'll cook and then mm-hmm. I'll take the product to the market and I'll see what people are liking, what they're not liking, and change the recipe again next week mm-hmm. and cook it again. That's the stage that I was at. He's like, oh no, you should be at Whole Foods. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Right. That's a scary to transition, right?
Exactly. So mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's the consumer we always made the product for. But I think I have a long way to go. At that time, my product shelf life was 3 weeks because that's right. the only time I had because I was trying to make it no preservatives, nothing. I had to test it week by week to see mm-hmm. how long it'll last.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that because I refused to add even citric acid or right. ascorbic acid. There is nothing that's made in a lab in my food. Like mm-hmm. that was my belief that food should come as close to plant, as close to its real form as
yes.
we can.
Mm-hmm.
Is the food we as humans need to be eating.
Mm-hmm.
So that really elongated our R&D process because it was week yes. after week, you know, month after month testing
right.
to figure out if it is right or not. And me revising recipes based mm-hmm. on consumer feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually we launched at Whole Foods and then, you know, we tested region by region. So till 2016, end of 2016, I was just doing Ontario. So when we started seeing more interest from other regions. So Ontario is the province that I'm in. It's the biggest province, but we were mostly around GTA. So till for the first couple of years, yeah. I was just in GTA.
Yeah.
I was doing everything from, I was the one who manufactures it, the mm-hmm. one who bottles it, the one who carries it to the store, the mm-hmm. one who does the bookkeeping. And 2017, we got interest from a national chain. So I had to develop, I just developed scaled up recipes. Mm-hmm. We got our organic certification. And yeah, the rest is history.
So it was in that moment when people started, maybe you had retail interest that was, or people from a retail background kind of pulling you. That's kind of when you were like, okay, I'm onto something. I've got this.
Yeah. And I think 2015, I was a little early on the trend too, when mm-hmm. we launched the ketchup mm-hmm. and barbecue sauce. By 2017, it was becoming more, you know, more and more people were aware of it. So
right.
the market was also growing too. So I think the time was right.
Mm-hmm.
For me to take the next step and actually get a co-manufacturer and a national distributor.
Wow.
To start mm-hmm. distributing it nationally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because sometimes our learnings come from, well, I'll call them oopses or mistakes. And so I'm curious. I'm always curious, like, was there any one learning experience or lost opportunity or mistake that changed the trajectory of your business or maybe the way you lead your business?
Absolutely. I think every business has several to share. One I can share from early days. So because I was testing in farmers markets, one of the product that I launched was a line of dips that were high protein. So they were, you know, beans based. So one was chickpeas, one was white beans, one was black beans.
Mm-hmm.
But their names were very out of the world. So they were Mumbai Mint, Oaxaca Arbol, mm-hmm. Buñol Asado.
Yeah.
And there was one Cuban too, which I'm forgetting what the name was. But but they were so out of the world. They did great in farmers market when people could taste and then buy multiples and then
yes.
go eat it. But the minute I launched them in retail, I learned mm-hmm. if people from the package cannot tell what to do with the product,
Yeah.
Or what it tastes like.
Yes.
It's not going to work. Like yes. I didn't have the money to educate everyone,
no.
right? I'm not
right.
there sampling throughout. So if it doesn't project, so that's why we made sure now we stick to pantry staples. We stick
yes.
to things. We are improving things that already exist versus mm-hmm. creating things that no one knows. Like it's
right.
great. Like I would love to create all the new to the world flavors. Like that's the most exciting thing for mm-hmm. anybody in product development, which I consider myself in product development because I love doing that. Even though I have no food science degree.
That's okay. No, it's totally okay.
So that's the reason we decided to make sure with Good Food for Good, we improve pantry mm-hmm. staples.
Mm-hmm.
And also for me, sauces, it was important because to be honest, cooking is the best thing we all can do for our health.
Right.
It's the
You're right.
simplest and the most important thing you can do for your health is cook
mm-hmm.
your own food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy when you have never done it. Right? It's very complicated, especially if you try and do things from a culture that uses a yeah. zillion ingredients that you're not familiar with.
Yes.
Like I would never dare to cook a Thai sauce from scratch.
Yeah.
And then even if I do, I don't know what I'm going to do with all the ingredients that I'll
exactly.
have to buy to make one meal.
Yeah. And invest $140 in spices that I'll use once.
Exactly.
If I don't like it, that's a commitment, right?
That's exactly a huge mm-hmm. commitment. So that's where sauces came to be.
I love it.
Yeah, that's the reason why, you know, we really think sauces can really make it easy for people eating healthy.
Yeah.
To add that flavor, right? Yeah. To just because we all need little help. It can be boring sometimes.
Yes. Well, and I would agree. I absolutely 100% agree with this concept that people want to explore cuisines. I think the pandemic probably exacerbated that because we kind of like, okay, how many times am I going to eat the 12 meals that I've made my entire life, you know?
Yes.
And sauces really give an opportunity for the consumer to try something new without the time commitment and the financials. Because oftentimes, if you're trying new cuisine, you're also trying not just new ingredients, but you're trying new cooking styles. I have to do what with this? I don't know how to do that, or different pacing. And so the sauce is kind of a really nice intro to a curious consumer. But I wanted to piggyback off of your naming. Product naming situation, because we had a very similar instance when we worked with Sahale Snacks. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're out of the
yeah.
Northwest.
Yeah, I know.
When we worked with them, this is years ago now, when we worked with them, one of our biggest findings, because they had very Epicurean flavor profiles and they were trying to use the naming convention on their products. And the average consumer was like, I don't know what a Singberry cinnamon is and how that's going to be different than any other cinnamon. So the biggest learning, especially with a name like Sahale, which most consumers not from the Northwest wouldn't know how to pronounce that name, was to simplify it. It's going to have to be Sahale Snacks. But if a customer can't come to a retailer and say, or spell it, on the internet, if they're searching for it, you've lost that.
Yeah.
You've lost the opportunity because they won't know what the expectation is. But then they don't know how to find it again.
Yeah.
How do you go into a Costco? How do you go into a Whole Foods and ask for something if you don't know how to pronounce it or you don't exactly know what it is? So big learnings there. But what's amazing is as the consumer starts to get a little bit more comfortable with the new ingredients and new flavor profiles, which thankfully that's happening, we can push them a little further and push them. And hopefully we can use the General Mills of the world to do the heavy lifting in cuisines over there and kind of help pull a smaller, like I'm already part of the smaller brands, but help bring the smaller brands that are trying to push the envelope and work together as a collective to kind of grow that experience for the consumer altogether. Love it.
Totally.
Yeah. So I'm wondering kind of what milestone or moment in time are you most proud of right now? You know, from where you sit right now, what is the like, yeah, that when we did that thing, that was awesome.
When we reached the 1 million donations.
Oh, yes.
That was, you know, we did that. Like we were not counting every day kind of thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But in September, I did the math and we crossed 1 million. And like, that was the moment I've been waiting for a long time. So that meant something to me. Like I left a marketing career. I definitely would have made good financially, done good in that career. But one thing that I know I wouldn't have been able to do is donate over 1 million meals, right?
Yes.
To be able to leave the, you know, help, like really help.
Yes.
People who we all can help. Seriously, it does not take that much to help. and to create something that would continue to do that throughout the life of the business.
What's the next threshold or goal that you want to hit? I'm curious.
I to be honest, I haven't thought of
the
next goal. No. I think we have a lot of work to do in terms of education and amplification. About not just about our brand, but overall mindful consumption. So to me,
yes,
when I would say if I can educate more people about mindful consumption and the impact their consumption patterns have on the world, and their health, then I would say I would have, you know, made a difference consistently. That's the biggest thing at this point in the world where we are, that we all need to be mindful of.
I think waste is getting on the mind of a lot more people now, but particularly, you know, we're in Earth Month right now. And so that's kind of top of mind. I'm actually writing on a number of issues myself about recycling and waste and overconsumption.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very challenging as a CPG brand to be in this place because there's the tension. You need to make money. You need people to purchase your product to stay in business, to feed your family and all the people that work for you. And at the same time, you don't want to be a net negative contributor to the mess that we're creating. It's super challenging.
Very, very. And I'm glad you brought the recycling point. We use glass thinking that, like, when we started using, like, okay, plastic is an absolute no-no because of what happens to plastic. Only 9% of the plastic ever produced ever gets recycled.
Yes.
But with glass, when I read the stats, that didn't make me that happy either.
Like, no.
I'm choosing glass, but only 30% of it is better than plastic, but it's still only 30%. I mean, there is no reason for us to not be able to recycle more of glass. It's so much easier to recycle this material than or recycle or reuse versus plastic. Mm-hmm. And we still don't. So a lot of the work that I want to do is focused around that and reducing food waste at home, because 43% of food is wasted at home.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, it's not in the farms. It's at home.
It's at home.
It's what we buy. We just throw without making it.
Yeah, it's crazy to me because I think some of it is that food is relatively inexpensive for us in North America in particularly. Yeah. I mean, we say it's expensive, but if we look at pricing structures around the world, food is incredibly cheap. And then what we do in order to get it cheap is we pay labor really cheap. And then we produce so much of it so that we could sell more of it, which is just waste. And I'm like, this isn't feeling good. It's a systems thinking. It's
a systemic problem. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And it's not just the manufacturer producing more and wasting it. Mm-hmm. It's we as consumers buying more than what we can eat and then wasting it, right? Like not doing meal plan, buying things and not making them and thinking, oh, no, today I'm feeling like eating out. And, you know, once in a while, that's fine. But figuring out, treating the the amount of effort that goes in, like if anybody has ever worked in a farm, they right. know what it takes
yes.
to grow.
yes.
Anything. Or you have a kitchen garden.
Yes.
And that would tell you the effort it takes to grow those
that scale. Ugh.
And those carrots, and especially organic, right? You're doing yes. everything by hand. Like I went to, when I just started this business, I went to an organic farm and to help the farmer we were buying garlic from. And he's like, yeah, you can hoe the weeds. And I didn't even know what hoeing meant. But it was hard. It was
yes.
sunny. It was painful. It was sweaty. And then we call organic food expensive.
Right.
Like I have yeah. never seen an organic farmer drive a Mercedes. And we call organic food expensive. They work so freaking hard. They work
yes,
so hard.
They do.
It's a they tough do. Job. It's like our farmers need to be front and center. Like the people need to be educated where and how their food becomes food. That perhaps yeah. might change their thinking on mm-hmm. the cheap food.
Yeah.
It's worth throwing. Like I try and take my daughter to farms to teach her how it's going. Like we just went to a date farm when that 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Date. They call date grove. Wrong words. I
yes.
use.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was fascinating to learn how they're grown. Like I was mind blown. They had to manually take pollen from male date plants and manually put it on female date plants.
Oh, which, you're kidding.
No, seriously, manually, by hand.
Oh, wow.
I was blown away. I thought that was bees. That's what bees do. But
wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just knowing that what it takes to get that nice, juicy date.
Yes. Well, exactly the way you want it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a whole date, not
oh,
broken pieces. Yeah.
Right.
A lot of work. It's
yes.
a lot of work.
Oh my goodness.
People just need to talk to farmers. They need to see and then things will change.
Yes.
I have hope things will change.
Yes. Well, and then in addition to the cheap food, then on the recycling and creating kind of a closed loop system. And I was at a packaging summit in February, and we talked about the fact that the two biggest challenges that we have on the closed loop system, and you might have seen this already, is number one, most of our packaging is mixed materials. And when consumers do a lot of wish cycling because we create this thing, we call it recyclable, but it's not. And then mm-hmm. it gets tossed out. Then secondly, the conversion, the MRFs, like you've got a whole industry, the collection from the curb to a reuse is broken and there's inconsistencies. And I feel like that's the easiest thing to fix.
Yeah.
That I feel is the easiest thing is to fix this. How do we fix from the house through the reuse cycle again? Like anybody listening here that's an engineer, an innovator, the opportunity for growth is right there.
Totally.
It's right there.
TerraCycle is trying to do something,
yeah.
but it's still very complicated. It's still a very complicated
yeah.
and a very expensive
yes.
A process. And I am not sure why governments, like they are doing this anyways.
Yeah.
Why can't they join hands, make one single process? This is how this is done in all municipalities.
Yeah. Super challenging. I'll send you, after we're done with this, I'm going to send you some information.
I'd love that.
Even in Europe, where you countries where you get fined or rewarded for recycling, the maximum recycling, I believe, is either in Germany or Sweden at 80%.
That's incredible. I think even if we reach 80%,
yeah.
it'll be
yeah.
incredible.
Yeah.
How do
and,
they?
Well, they 80%. Get fined, and they. I mean, Americans are not keen on being fined or rewarded. They just want to be able to do, or North Americans, Canadians, I think, are a little bit more rule followers than Americans are. No, not so much. Well, I can keep that fallacy in my head. In any case, I'll send you the information. It's pretty striking. Like the countries that have incredible structures, government structures or municipality structures have a higher participation rate, and therefore they have less issues. And there's a huge revenue structure behind it as well, because the more recycling there is, the more there is stuff to do. And that's why I'm like, there's an opportunity there that I think that as a culture, North Americans are not really paying attention to, because waste isn't sexy. But I think pretty soon waste is going to have to be dealt with, because there's nowhere for it to go.
I agree. Yeah. The whole thing, we all live in one planet. I don't know why we forget. Yes, we are divided by boundaries, but that does not change the planet.
It's so funny.
Right? Throw it in China. We'll just pack it and send it to China.
Nah, and they don't want it anymore.
And they don't want it.
And I feel like as North Americans in particular, I don't mean to pick on myself because I am a North American myself, but we kind of behave like teenagers. You know, you go into a teenager's room and there's crap all over the floor because mom's going to clean it up. That's what I feel like is happening right now. And eventually we'll grow out of our teens and get into a headspace where we're a little bit more respectful of what needs to be done. But that's my soapbox. I'll just stand down.
Yeah, I think we can talk for hours
on that. Oh my goodness.
We need to get some leaders in the room who really care about these things. And perhaps we can, you know, brainstorm and come up with a solution for different backgrounds, right? Like, I only know what I know. Like, I don't know the other side. I don't know municipality side as much as well. And there is a lot of work that needs to be done.
Agreed. Well, I have a couple more questions before I need to let you go, but I am curious. You know, we've been talking about a lot of things, systemic things, business things, leadership things. What advice do you find yourself giving other founder, owner, entrepreneurs when they come to you and they want to start a business, or they're struggling within their business unit even? What are you telling them?
I think that one, and it's not a very popular advice, but it is what it is. I see entrepreneurs as warriors. Mm. I think every day we need to, or firefighters, every day, if they are not ready to fight fires or solve problems, we are not doing our job. That's our job as entrepreneur, to create. Like, if it was easy, then everybody would be doing it.
Preach.
Right? Right? If it was easy, but if there are problems, that's your job to tackle that problem. Yes, there'll be problems. Like, who told you that entrepreneurship is easy?
Yeah.
So just wear that warrior outfit or whatever makes you feel like one, and then go tackle it. Like, there is a solution to every problem that comes. Mm-hmm. You just need to find an answer. And that's my little spiel. I'm a tough love girl.
Tough love. We need it sometimes, right?
Like, well, just do it.
Yes. What is next for Good Food for Good, or what's next for you? What's on the horizon?
As I said, there's so much work that needs to be done, right? So for Good Food for Good as a brand, we still have a lot of ground to cover. We have only scratched the surface. In US and Canada, with our sauces, we've been able to avoid sugar worth 17 million cookies from diets of Americans, but Americans eat billions of cookies or sugar worth billions of cookies. Mm-hmm. And I'm not against like sugar as a food group or as like desserts are bad. There's a place, right?
Yes, there's
a place for everything.
Like, absolutely.
Right. Like, I like my dessert, but I like my sugar in my dessert. Right. Yes. Like, when I'm craving sugar, I would rather keep my 6 teaspoon that WHO says for my dessert. I don't want to have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right.
And I think there is so much work we need to do on that side. There is so much work that needs to be done on making plant-based more holistic and not just highly processed, version of meat.
Yes.
Again, so much work that needs to be done on making a difference and fight against hunger and
wonderful.
Health.
Yes, wonderful. Well, there's a couple of last questions I like to ask everybody. The first one is, are there any women leaders or rising stars out there in our industry or not that you would like to elevate or simply admire for the work that they're doing right now and why?
Absolutely. Shelby, I would say Shelby Taylor from Chicopee Pasta. I don't know if you've spoken to her.
No. Mm-mm.
She's also a fellow B Corp, Canadian. Incredible story on how she's building her company. They are really revolutionizing the pasta segment. Her pasta is made with two ingredients, chickpea and lentils, all certified organic, and they give back to the community as well. Like doing all the right things that are needed to be done to be a force for good. So I have a lot of admiration for her. And single-handedly, she's building this while she's a mom of two little kids. So I'm super proud of what she has done. And her products are also available across North America, US and Canada, even in Costco. So great story. Like she would be another person I would highly recommend if you want to invite for podcast. There's so much I learn from her every day.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you. Of course. And might overlap. Any brands or food trends that you have your eye on and why?
I would say plant-based 2.0, where people see plants as plants appealing, not plants that look like meat appealing. But I would say cooked like the renaissance of cooking. And I hope what people have learned during COVID, it stays because it's serious. It will make such a big difference in our health, in the planet's health, when we buy ingredients versus always buying packaged things and just microwaving and eating it.
Yes.
There's a lot. Those two things, I should say, not one. You asked for one, I gave you two.
Oh, that's okay. That's totally okay. My goodness. Well, we have been listening, talking with Richa Gupta, president of Good Food for Good. Richa, where can people learn more about you and your company, your brand?
Absolutely. You can follow our journey on goodfoodforgood.ca or any social media channels. Just use Good Food for Good as the username or whatever it's called, handle.
We'll have to ask your daughter.
She knows the lingo.
She does.
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I have been just thrilled to talk to you and learn a little bit more about your journey and see, and I'm excited to see what's next for you. And I want to thank our listeners for their time today. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Otherwise, have a great rest of your day, and we'll catch you next time on the Gooder Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.